You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Jessie Tima about her perspectives on perfectionism. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. Jessie Tima is an equine surgeon at Rhinebeck Equine in the Hudson Valley of New York. Her clinical interests include gastrointestinal and soft tissue surgery, wound management, sports medicine, and back disorders. Dr. Tima grew up in New Hope, Pennsylvania, and attended Amherst College for her undergraduate education, followed by Cornell University's College of Veterinary Medicine. She completed a rotating internship at Rhinebeck Equine, followed by a large animal surgical residency at the University of Georgia, and became a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Surgeons in 2019. She joined Rhinebeck Equine in 2023 as a staff surgeon. Dr. Tima is the chair of the AAEP Early Career Committee and is both a Decade One and Starting Gate Group facilitator. She is passionate about providing dedicated mentorship for intern veterinarians and building a strong sense of community and collaboration through her practice. Dr. Tima is an avid CrossFitter, hiker, skier, and traveler. She thoroughly enjoys doting on her cats and her miniature horses. Welcome, Dr. Tima.
Thank you, Amy. I appreciate you having me here.
It's always great to have you on the podcast. I was so interested in your eye-opening presentation on perfectionism at the AAEP convention. What inspired you to write that paper about perfectionism?
Well, thank you. I have just found that perfectionism is absolutely rampant across veterinary medicine, very much so, including equine veterinary medicine, and really no one talks about it. So many of us struggle with it, myself included. I've come face to face with my own challenges with perfectionism, and then I see a lot of the same tendencies in my colleagues and early career mentees and interns just across the board. It manifests differently for all of us, but I think a lot of us are affected by it. I see how it hinders me. I see how it absolutely cripples me sometimes. And then there's some times where I do feel empowered by it as well. I want to talk about it. I want to kind of call out what it is, acknowledge its presence in what we do every day, to normalize the struggle that it may impose on our work, and to help others find resources on how to work through it, knowing that a lot of us are experiencing perfectionism in our day-to-day work and life.
You know, I think there's such a difference between good or maybe adaptive perfectionism and bad or maladaptive perfectionism, because sometimes it's really helpful. And other times it's like, oh, God, can you tell us about your perspective on the difference?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is such a crucial point and really in a way defines how my experience and perception of perfectionism has changed. I think perfectionism has carried a pretty negative stigma in recent popular media, so much so that admitting or owning up to being a perfectionist can be quite shame inducing, or at least that's how it's felt for me. I often like think about the classic interview question, describing your biggest weakness, boom, perfectionism. It's kind of like a humble brag. Like I'm low key obsessed with being really good at this thing that society tells me to be really good at, but ooh, I'm going to hold shame about this, but you're actually kind of glad that I'm like this, but it's not really a great thing. So I think about that a lot, and I think about how complicated that dynamic is. And then I also feel like I've heard about a lot of people talk about being a recovering or a recovered perfectionist. And this language makes it sound like it's something that you need to overcome. And I just feel like this whole mindset is not healthy. So I've really tried to shift to not pathologizing perfectionism. I now think about perfectionism as the gap between the reality we experience and the ideal that we envision. And this is how perfectionism is defined by an author named Katherine Morgan Schaffler in her book, The Perfectionist's Guide to Losing Control. This book is awesome. It is a must read. It is a game changer. It was a game changer for me, and I've recommended it to a lot of my colleagues, a lot of my mentees as well. This definition of perfectionism is neutral, and it's just so much less charged for me as I read it and as I read the way that she experiences and defines perfectionism and what it means and what it can do for us. So in this definition, perfectionism exists on a spectrum from adaptive to maladaptive, as you said. Adaptive perfectionism is utilizing traits under the perfectionism umbrella for healthy applications. So what that looks like is setting high standards, but being realistic about challenges and setbacks. Adaptive perfectionism can be more of a tool for growth that helps us embrace the process, but we can celebrate small successes along the way. Alternatively, maladaptive perfectionism is a really unhealthy manifestation of these tendencies. Maladaptive perfectionism comes from a fear of failure and a desire to avoid shame, which leads to overcriticism of self, procrastination, and ultimately burnout. Maladaptive perfectionism is also intertwined with imposter syndrome. I think many of us are familiar with what this is. The self-doubt, experience of phoniness, or feeling like you're not deserving of your accomplishments, your opportunities. In an imposter syndrome mindset, you don't feel like you're good enough or worthy enough of doing the job in front of you, or that you fooled others into believing you're competent. And you're setting yourself up for a cycle where perfectionism feels like the only way to prove yourself and get out of that. And that's just going nowhere fast. I think it's so important to realize the adaptive to maladaptive spectrum. So the healthy tendencies versus the unhealthy tendencies, because we all need to remind ourselves perfectionism is not black and white. It's not this dichotomous construct, and it's not inherently bad. There's in this book, Katherine Morgan Schaffler talks about a whole bunch of studies that compare adaptive perfectionists, maladaptive perfectionists, and non-perfectionists. And what I learned is that adaptive perfectionists have been demonstrated to have the highest levels of meaning in their work, subjective happiness, and life satisfaction. They're the least self-critical of all those groups. They're the most interested in working with others and have the lowest levels of anxiety and depression amongst the three groups. They maintained higher self-regard, demonstrated higher levels of work engagement and psychological well-being, lower levels of perceived failure, and exhibited solution-oriented approaches to stress, held more optimism about a future performance. So I think of these as all really, really good qualities. Those are things that perfectionism is adding to the mix compared to non-perfectionist. So what I'm trying to drive home is that leveraging adaptive qualities of your perfectionism can actually really provide great benefit, both professionally and personally, as compared to not only the maladaptive state, which is obviously quite negative, but also to non-perfectionists.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that you recommended read this book, and I loved it. And so then I got a couple copies and gave them to friends for Christmas. And
wonderful.
I mean, it is amazing when you read that research and it's like, yeah, I want to be one of those adaptive ones, because Wouldn't it be great to like have less worry, less anxiety, feel happier, feel more engaged? I mean, like, it's all good. And boy, the things that she writes in this book really start you on the path, you know, of recognizing when you're using your perfectionism for good. Mm-hmm. You know, you start to really get it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I felt too. And I feel like I have these moments where I see these glimpses and I'm really proud of myself. And then there are these other moments where I catch myself and I'm like, ooh, I'm leaning to the wrong direction of the spectrum, but I know it exists on the other side. So I kind of need to, you know, bring myself down and kind of coach myself through how am I talking to myself right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's the self-awareness. And, you know, as a surgeon and also a pretty serious athlete, I'd be willing to bet that you've got some personal perfectionist tendencies. And in this book, they talk about some styles. And there's actually, like a little test to tell you. I am so much a classic perfectionist. I was able to recognize myself there. What kind are you? Can you tell us about the styles?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, I do have a lot of perfectionist tendencies. That is correct. And I think that manifests probably in some of the ways that I define myself professionally and outside of work as well. I feel like I'm the classic perfectionist, or the ones that I put on a little bit of a pedestal. Like, I wish I was a classic perfectionist. And I think that some of those tendencies, I wish I had a little bit more. But of the five styles, I actually most identify with the intense and the procrastinator styles. Intense because I'm really goal-driven. I desire and even romanticize like perfect or ideal outcomes all the time. And I hold not only myself, but actually all like everyone around me accountable for those expectations, which is not great. I define my sense of self on these outcomes, and I project that onto everyone around me as well. And I'm probably focusing on the negative here, but I'm also like, I'm a hard worker, and I've really good follow through on these expectations. But this process and this kind of put my blinders on and don't really look at the collateral damage, sometimes it can really wreak havoc on my environment and community while I'm blindly chasing some goal that I've decided is the goal that I need. This really shows up for me at work. It shows up for me at the gym. I've tried to focus on the process and the art of the thing versus completing the thing better than I completed it the last time, I think is probably the easiest way to say that. So the other style that I really identify with is procrastinator perfectionist. So I sometimes have a hard time initiating a task that I am afraid that I won't be able to execute to some standard that I've created in my head that somehow makes me worthy. Procrastinator perfectionists really just hold a deep-seated fear of failure. I know I can be really self-critical of my processes. So with these tendencies, I lean on the perceived security of a guaranteed outcome and have a hard time approaching a new challenge, actually. So when I was in my residency and towards the end of my residency, it made operating independently a huge hurdle for me because I was so scared of making mistakes and not being good enough. And it was like, if there was another surgeon in the building who I thought was going to give a horse a better chance at a good outcome, I was really scared to be the only one scrubbed in, or the adultiest adult scrubbed in. That was really intimidating for me and hard to overcome. So you mentioned you're a classic perfectionist. Classic perfectionists are how perfectionists, I think, are stereotypically considered highly structured and self-disciplined individuals, thriving on formulas, thriving on systems, thriving on control a bit as well. There are also Parisian perfectionists, or the people-pleasing perfectionists. So these individuals, they might project as really easygoing, but they have a deep-seated desire and need to be perfectly perceived and perfectly liked. The last style are the messy perfectionists. These perfectionists have the opposite problem of the procrastinators. They love to start things and kind of romanticize the idea of doing all the things. But they struggle to maintain momentum once the initial excitement of the shiny new idea or thing has worn off. They kind of feel like they can do it all, and they lack the focus to direct their energy towards following through or employing the help of a team or delegating. And they're motivated by the fear of loss, so that I guess like saying no to engaging in something is a lost opportunity. That's kind of a brief overview of the five styles. They're not a be all end all, but at least for me, they really helped inform motivations and fears that drive our tendencies and allow for awareness, I think, to cultivate a more adaptive versus maladaptive approach specific to each and any of those styles.
I thought it was so interesting when I was reading about the styles to recognize people that I know. I have a dear friend that is absolutely a Parisian perfectionist. And I was like, wow. Like it gave me such understanding. And gosh, all you have to do is watch a messy perfectionist when you're a classic perfectionist needing control. And it's you're stressful. Like, going,
blah. It's stressful. Yeah. Stop. Yeah. And it's just different motivations for each one.
It's so interesting. So how What kind of advice or what advice would you give to those who'd like to learn to use their perfectionism as a superpower? Because it can be.
Yeah, it absolutely can be. And I want to, like, I hope that we both can scream that from the rooftops, because I feel strongly that it can be. And I think as perfectionists, we all just need to find that space for ourselves. Number one, I would recommend to anyone listening to this to absolutely read this book. Again, it's called The Perfectionist Guide to Losing Control by Katherine Morgan Schaffler. It was an absolute game changer for me. I think it's particularly well geared towards women and talking about how societal constructs around feminism are a driver for perfectionism in women more so in men. That for me, that really struck a chord, and really the rest fell into place from there. There's also a lot of data to back the dialogue, which I really appreciate as well. Some of the broad stroke solutions really from this book and from other things that I have read that I found to be tangible and helpful for me professionally include reframing my mindset around perfectionism to embrace it as an ally versus an enemy, shifting my goal from perfect outcomes to really continuous learning. I am on a continuous, long, long journey to practice self-compassion instead of reaching for self-criticism and self-punishment, which is much more natural for me, unfortunately. I recognize that I am the only one setting some imaginary, unattainable standard, and my worth isn't dependent on chasing this ever-moving target. When I'm really struggling in this realm, which is still pretty common for me, I try and ask myself what I would say to a colleague or a friend in my shoes, because I think most of us do a better job holding compassion for others than for ourselves. And I find this exercise to be quite grounding for me when I'm spiraling in my negative self-criticism talk. Another thing that I do is I try to think about managing energy versus managing time. I am definitely someone who is constantly thinking about time and how I want to spend my time, and critical of maybe how others manage time as well. But there are so many factors that are out of our control, and how we choose to invest our energy in each of those is a choice that we can make. So I think changing my perspective on that was also very helpful. I also think that we should choose to save some of our energy for ourselves than being worried about these things that are out of our control too. Something else is setting boundaries. So big. Excellence does not require doing everything yourself. We could talk a lot about this, but I think it fits in. Cultivating vulnerability in your professional community is really important. This is going to foster connection and trust and create psychologically safe spaces. Normalizing imperfection, what you and I are doing right now, truly talking about perfectionism and normalizing how hard it is, talking about the hard stuff, asking, you know, others who are struggling, like, what are you intimidated by? What is your fear in this space? What are your challenges? I think it just creates a space for conversations to be able to learn and grow collaboratively and hold empathy and support for one another, which I think is so important in what we do every day. Last thing here, I also try and shift from a micro to a macro perspective. So I think it's so easy as perfectionists who like to think about fine-tuned details a lot of the times, we get lost in the weeds and dialed in on one small bit of like turbulence. I try and ask myself, how does this decision or how does this thing affect my long-term goals and values? And that can kind of bring me back down from this amped up space, getting hyper-focused on one thing that doesn't really matter that much.
That's a really important one, you know, like asking yourself, how am I going to feel about this next week? Am I even going to remember that I had feelings about it at all?
Truly. Yeah.
And absolutely. Like what you were saying, that we hold more compassion for others. Sometimes when someone has expressed to me some negative feeling about themselves or they're not, I say, would you say that to your best friend? Because don't say anything to yourself that you wouldn't say to your best friend.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I think it's easy, even as perfectionists, like we can see other people doing it to themselves, and we are so sad for them that they are in that self-criticism spiral, but it doesn't mean that we are that great at recognizing it ourselves or pulling ourselves out of it. So I think being able to see those corollaries, those parallels, and to recognize that we should want for ourselves is what we want for our good friends, for our colleagues, is really important.
Yeah, we should want that for ourselves too. Mm-hmm. So is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I guess I'll finish up with a couple of things here. I think I want any and all perfectionists listening to know that you are enough just the way that you are, even if you feel like you're on this constant journey of feeling like you're not enough. And you are also, you're definitely not alone if you feel like you're struggling. There are so many resources out there. And I think we will all do better by talking about this more, especially in our equine veterinary community. So thank you, Amy, for inviting me to talk about this today. It's really hard. It's so inherently messy, which I think it's something that all perfectionists would prefer to hide. I feel like I'm finally starting to see some beauty in that chaos as well. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to get more comfortable being uncomfortable leaning into that. And it's only going to get better with time, I think. And I hope that anyone who is having similar struggles will consider taking a similar approach or finding an approach that works for them to work through it.
And takes the time to order this book and have a read. Yes. It's a really good read.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially for a scientist with all the data, you know.
Yeah, like it's
good in so many ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. I didn't feel like I was reading fluff or unvalidated claims. Like there was so much empirical data to back up what just made sense.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Taima.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Amy. This is really fun.
And thank you all for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave. Embrace change.